That was Corey Day of Dr. Buzzard and his original Savannah Band. Today you're going to be hearing a tape that I did on Monday with Bertha Harris, lesbian author. Before that, one announcement. Wednesday, December 8th, Temple is having Mary Wollstonecraft Day. All activities are to be held at Gladfelder Hall, which is located at 12th and between, it's on 12th, between Berks and Montgomery Avenues. From 11:30 to 12:30 will be an opening slide lecture called The Age of the Chemise, Female Fashion in the Early American Republic, and that will be given by Betty Brightlow. That'll be in Gladfelder Room 13. From 12:30 to 2:30 will be a free luncheon with coffee. There will be displays on women, conversation, and music from the age of Mary Wollstonecraft. Workshops will be held from 3 to 4, Women in Religion, Women in Economy, and Women in Education. There will be a final reception from 4 to 4:30, and Mary Wollstonecraft punch will be served. So I urge you all to come, especially since one of my classes is putting it on. You're listening to Amazon Country. I'm Victoria Brownworth, and now you'll be hearing an interview with Bertha Harris. Today I'm speaking with Bertha Harris, author of Catching Sarah Dove, Confessions of Cherubino, and Lover, and most recently an article in Christopher Street on the women in Paris in the 20s, writers in Paris. I'd like to know what you see writing as meaning to you, what it's representative of for you, and if you see it as a means of education.
Well, I have to go back a little bit. Writing started out for me as when I look back on it now, as a means of freedom. A place to go that would get away from that would get me away from my family and the really ghastly environment of a place called Fayetteville, North Carolina. As much as I wanted it to, I hesitate to use the word escape because it was not an escape process in the way that people generally use that word. It was not like blowing your brains out or burning your brains out with a soap opera.
Maybe retreat is a better word.
Yeah, but it opened up places to go, and it began to define my life and everything I wanted to do with my life. I see it, and I suppose I've done this through three novels, but with increasing consciousness of what I wanted to do. And now I think I'm entirely conscious of how I want to use fiction. It's not explicitly or primarily, I think, a means of education. I would like it to begin to define what a lesbian is, what the lesbian sensibility is, what the possibilities of being a lesbian are. Of course, in a dramatic form rather than an expository form. I rely on fantasy a lot because I think in a world that is explicitly male and male-dominated and heterosexual, a lot of lesbians live in their heads. In fact, that's perhaps where our true life goes on outside the little subculture we inhabit in a group or with our lovers. So particularly in this latest book, Lover, I think I've tried to, by plunging into my own dreams and fantasies, to hopefully universalize them and also exaggerate in many ways areas of relationships that I think might possibly be there were we not in a patriarchy, were we not living in a place where it is not only dangerous but threatening to be lesbian. For instance, towards the end of this novel I have this huge collection of women all the way through the book, but I have a woman who is the grandmother who suddenly realizes that she is in love with her granddaughter. And It occurred to me to mention that because a review in the Denver feminist newspaper, Big Mama Rag, was a very funny review. And this, the woman who wrote the review said, "My God, can you imagine a grandmother in love with her granddaughter?" But after going through the whole process of this book, I realized that this character could indeed not merely love, but be romantically in love with her granddaughter. And it was happening in a world that I had taken outside the real world. It has all the usual accoutrements, like trees and houses and so forth. It's not a science fiction book, but it, I realized it could happen that Samaria could indeed fall in love with Flynn and so forth.
In terms of, of patriarchy, do you feel that that has a really decided effect on what women are writing?
Well, I think it does in two ways, for the most part, two big general ways, although there are lots of little subdivisions under this. I think women's fiction, and I'll confine myself to that for the most part since I know it best, is post-feminism. And I'm including that post-feminist lesbian fiction is of two kinds. It's either reacting against patriarchal modes in literature, deliberately and consciously, or else it is retreating into the very rich, full world of the dyke imagination. And that too is a reaction, but it's more of a, it's reaction plus something else. It's not social realism, for instance. It interests me because, for instance, I see straight feminists like Marge Piercy writing more and more what I would describe as social realism, even though her latest book, we're supposed to assume it's science fiction, but it really isn't.
No,
it relies again on the accoutrements of the patriarchy and reactions to it and struggling with it. I think the best dyke fiction is refusing gradually to struggle with patriarchy anymore. It's stepping outside that culture and that psychology and those politics. Joanna Russ's science fiction novel, The Female Man, I consider one of the best syntheses of good radical politics, imagination, intellectual behavior and giving it intellectual pleasure along with the usual things that fiction does.
Do you feel that one of your interests in the Parisian set in the 20s has to do with escaping from patriarchal confines in literature?
Yeah, when I first became interested in that, I think I was about 21 years old, and I'd gone through that that whole education of the young woman number, in which with a perfectly good English major under my belt, I had never read a single woman author throughout the whole shtick, except for Jane Austen, which was taught by a little old lady that nobody took seriously. And it was the usual crap: Hemingway, Joyce, and then the other good old boys, you know, Shakespeare, Chaucer, and so forth. So,
but extremely patriarchal.
Extremely patriarchal. Yeah. So that when I think it was exam week of my senior year, I stumbled across a book that had last been checked out in the college library in 1940. And it was called Nightwood by Juno Barnes.
Right.
And it absolutely
devastated
me. Yeah,
exactly.
And I thought, my God, this is it. And went straight to New York and found out that Juno Barnes lived in Greenwich Village in a little muse place called Patchin Place. And I spent every minute away from my typing job following her around the street. Or waiting
that
for
must
her
have
to
been
come
fascinating.
Out.
Oh, yes. That's great.
She became my hero. She began to represent what I wanted to be. And from her, I moved on to finding clues and glimmerings of what that group in Paris had been about.
The thing that fascinates me about that particular set of people is that they were all so incredibly talented, and not just talented, but really ahead of their time. Romaine Brooks' paintings or her drawings are, you know, really precursors of the things that Picasso, you know, was made famous for. Natalie Barney was an amazing woman with just an incredible knowledge of everything. And René Vivien is was an excellent poet, despite her bizarre emotional problems.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that one of the things that you're talking about is the lack of models for women, especially lesbian women. And I'd like to know what you hope lesbian fiction would accomplish in that area.
Well, for instance, I would like to see the works of Natalie Clifford Barney and René Vivien disseminated far more widely than they are now. In fact, I'd like to see
them... Well, they're practically non-existent.
Well, there's some bit of good news, because Naiad Press, the lesbian press that was a breakaway offshoot from the old Ladder, which was the only lesbian publication for so many years, has recently reissued, in fact, today's practically publication day, of the only novel that René Vivien ever wrote, which translated is entitled The Woman Who Appeared to Me. And it's a very romantic, perfumed hothouse type of style, but it contains some of the most devastatingly revolutionary remarks I've ever read. In fact, it's the natural mother, if she had only known it, of Valerie Solanas when she wrote Scum Manifesto. But I'd much rather see, for instance, these books. I'd like to see not only Renee's novel, but her poetry and Natalie Clifford Barney's work translated and brought into the mass market. But much more so than, say, some of the lesbian writers who have entered more or less the mainstream now, whose work I don't particularly respect, like Mae Sarton, who has become a popular favorite. Her work, for instance, is very sugary, sentimental. It has none of that toughness and strength and acerbity that.
Well, also just means, you know, the tightness of the literary accoutrements that other people like Dina Barnes has had. I mean, she has such a marvelous control over the short story. Mm-hmm. I mean, she can say more in 3 pages of a short story than a lot of novelists I've read. And one of the problems that I have with current lesbian fiction is that it's sort of riding in on the wave of,
right,
of the lesbian movement. And I think that one of the things we need to do is sort out what's good and what isn't. It's not just a question of, well, we don't have anything, we need to have lesbian writers, we need lesbian novels, lesbian poetry, etc., and just accept anything. That's hardly the criteria that male writers have been accepted on.
Certainly.
And I think that, you know, it's a grave mistake and lessens the force of the movement itself.
Exactly. Well, I agree with you entirely. Sarton and Rule are two names that jumped out and I think absolutely illustrate your point, because both of them are profiting from the lesbian movement without ever really taking a radical lesbian stance themselves, or not just politically, I would give them that, but that they do not let their politics, if they have any, affect their work, change that work in any way.
I would like to go back to that, but one thing that I feel, especially with Jane Rule's work, is that it's very, you know, it's sprawling is the only way I can think of describing it. And it has like a drugstore cheapness about it that is a carryover from things like Well of Loneliness and and all those novels from the 50s, you know, that came out only in paperback.
And Bannon, Bebo Brinker.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I remember finding that book when I was babysitting for someone, you know, and devouring it because there was nothing else. But when you have a choice of, you know, the Well of Loneliness or nothing, you know, it's really
the well.
It's a choice of not much. And I, for one, would like to see good lesbian novels, but I don't think there are a lot around.
Well, I think, for instance, I guess I'm biased because it is my publisher now, but I think that, for instance, Daughters, Inc., who publishes both lesbian and heterosexual women's literature, but if they have feminist consciousness in it, is my best hope to get to what you're talking about. And when I was, I was reviewing Jane Rule's latest book, Lesbian Images, for Ms. Magazine recently, and I found myself saying that her dismissal, her summary dismissal of books from the Daughters Press, very enraging because, and again, that quote from Stein quoting Picasso leapt to my mind, that those who come first don't make it pretty. They're struggling, they're experimenting, they're trying new modes and new forms, and those who come later can make it pretty. And it seems to me that that's what, for instance, June Arnold has done in entirely original works such as The Cook and the Carpenter, Sister Jen. These are not polished up and neat, and they don't make you feel good, but
well, there's,
this is,
you know,
the outline of what...
It's the sort of... I would like to see lesbian fiction, you know, acquire the taste and the background of someone's work like Doris Lessing, who writes a very good feminist line. You know, you can't say that she writes any kind of lesbian fiction, but it's possible for work to be good, and, you know, it's immaterial whether it's pretty or not. It's, you know, that... The Well of Loneliness was not pretty, and it was not good either.
Right.
You know, you know, it doesn't give you much of a choice. It really doesn't. As what were we talking about before? Politics and art. That is something that I really am interested in your views on. If you feel that it's really necessary to have your art fused with your politics.
I think it does. I think it is crucial. Again, especially to achieve the type of writing you're talking about, and it may not seem directly true, but I think eventually it will have to be that way. In the same way that patriarchal politics are so incredibly fused with writers like James Joyce, who are considered great artists, or James Dickey, who in certain quarters is considered a great artist, that part of building the literature we hope for, that is resonant with our culture and with our learning and with our background and with the details of the world that we need, that we must have that framework, that we must have a decision-making politics about what we choose to write about, and which even unconsciously can direct what we choose to say and how we detail it. I don't mean, for instance, that we interrupt a scene between the sheets with a political announcement. We pause in this act to bring you a political announcement, but that there is an infusion.
Well, what do you feel that you have accomplished in your work, and how do you feel about people like, well, the first person who comes to mind, I guess, is Jill Johnston, who is so politically oriented, or even Rita Mae Brown, who is pretty much politically oriented.
Yeah, she would think so. Well, that's three questions.
Okay.
Which one's first? What do I feel like I've accomplished in my own writing? Is that it? I don't know. I don't contemplate it very much after I finished writing it. And my work is very difficult, I think, because difficult, say, compared to Ruby Fruit Jungle, Lover is very difficult to read because it's very dense and it's very... it was, at least for me, a very courageous attempt to break down the linear pattern of the standard hetero-patriarchal novel form and to try to make it, not only in content, but in style and tone and flavor, what I had noticed in my own head as a lesbian and what I'd noticed in living with lesbians, to try to make it, well, as Mr. Eliot would say, the style be the content, and the content be the style. I don't think it's an enormous success, but it you know, I hope I've got maybe 20 good more years to bring it off.
Well, it seems to me to be similar to the things that Virginia Woolf was trying to do when she was writing, particularly her novels in the decade of the 20s.
Yeah.
Very oriented towards what is actually happening. You know, reality-oriented, I suppose, is a way of looking at it.
Well, Woolf was, I think Woolf felt very, despite these recent books that have come out on her, I think she felt incredibly alien and lived a lot in what she would have liked things to be or what went on in her head, and I think that there may be that similarity. You can't be a lesbian in this culture without feeling somewhat alienated, no matter how hard you try. So, Jill's writing is... I call it passion politics. She's, I think, a very gifted lyricist, and I think her work was crucial at one time, and it may still be, but we haven't heard from her in quite a while.
Sure.
And Rita May is charming and funny and. I think her greatest value frequently comes in as being the first book that some lesbians are able to read and get through, and it's I love Ruby Fruit Jungle in a particular way because whether Rita knew it or not, I think she was rewriting the old Horatio Alger tales of how I'm a poor downtrodden dyke, but I can pick myself up and overcome all evil and odds and get the prettiest girl to go home with me and I'll succeed. And it's necessary. All these things are necessary, you know.
What do you feel about lesbian culture? Do you feel that it's possible for us to set up a culture for ourselves outside of the patriarchy? Or do you think that we have to work within it? And this is again three questions. And what is your feeling about straight women and the type of fiction that they write?
Well, it's complicated. I think our task, and indeed our burden, is that we have to do several things at once. We have to create our own culture, our own subculture, because until we become the dominant culture, we are always going to be a subculture. We have to constantly examine and challenge and criticize the culture we set up. We can't rest. We have to, again, simultaneously be working to overthrow the patriarchy, because one thing I entirely believe in, what the lessons of literature and my own writing have taught me, is that the thing about literature, I think its greatest service, is that it serves to show us who we are. and what we dream and think and feel. And as long as we are controlled by patriarchal attitudes and values, we will be responding to those in one way or the other, unless it becomes totally fantasy. On a more literal level, I certainly don't like the idea of people, although I know we all need vacations and rest sometime, I don't like the idea of running to the country and setting ourselves up in a commune and singing songs to the great Mother Goddess, because I think that's the easiest way to get wiped out. A little of that goes a long way. I'm too fraught with a sense of reality and danger that, you know, you've got the federal government, you've got the whole patriarchal mode of the entire planet, you've got, and the education of the next generation that has to be taken care of. And I forgot the, straight women.
I'm glad you remembered, because no. I cut completely off the track.
Well, I assume you mean straight feminist.
Yes, I should clarify that. For example, March Piercy, someone, you know, who writes a very feminist-oriented line, but is not lesbian, despite small changes.
Yeah. Well, quite frankly, it tends to bore me, although I see its virtues a lot. It goes back to what I was trying to articulate about social realism. One thing that struck me, and I can talk about Piercy in terms of some other writers, is that feminist straight writers, novelists, and straight novelists who have been affected by feminism, whether they have chosen to become feminist or not, are writing longer and longer and longer books. They're massive. They're becoming massive, and they are